but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. Now, built by high-caliber millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Jude Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Spencer McLaughlin talks all things college football and Oregon Ducks on the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football, among other things. And he joins us coming up. He also is a contributor at 750thegame.com. Got some posted stuff there a couple of times a week talking Oregon football. Later this hour, Ryan Harlan, Beaver's Edge, will stop by the program as well. Oregon State, not a great weekend for them. Not a great Saturday night. And now all of a sudden, TJ Houshmandzadeh feels like he's getting the Heisman from the program while he's trying to help the boys out. Took a lot of your calls in hour one, reacting to Oregon's win at Iowa. Oregon 18, Iowa 16. Just a beautiful final score for some good old school Big Ten football and a big road win for the Ducks. But it came at a cost, both in terms of injuries leading up to the game. Hopefully the quarterback is doing okay as well. But we'll see where the playoff committee ranks them Tuesday when the latest rankings come out. Spencer McLaughlin joining us on the guest hotline right now. Jude Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Spencer, wow, what a game. Stephen, my co-host here, he says this is Dan Lanning's most impressive win of his tenure, this win over Iowa. Do you agree with that?
No, I think you still have to go with Ohio State a season ago. I mean, certainly it's one of the best pure coaching jobs that Lanning has done, and I in no way want to downplay it or anything of that nature. I think that it was a really difficult game to win. Iowa is a good, solid team. The conditions were really difficult. You're missing three offensive starters and one on defense. Devin Jackson didn't play in that game either, and you find a way to win, and the execution was just so good down the stretch. Special teams has a great day on a weather day that can make it really hard to kick or snap the ball. There were no issues there. I think this was an outstanding win and one of the best coaching jobs Lanning has done, and a marker for the amount he's grown as a head coach over the last couple of years. I wouldn't say it's the best. I think you still have to go with Ohio State last year, even though that game was at home. You look at what that team went on to accomplish and what they had accomplished leading up to that game and all the hype and expectation, and that was a big breakthrough moment. Certainly this was another one, but I think that game on Saturday was just a heck of an effort and a true team effort as well.
Well, and Stephen, to your point, you're saying most impressive, like best would still be the Ohio State game, but most impressive considering the circumstances.
Yeah, I just think, the Ohio State game, obviously that was the best team that they played, that Lanning's beaten, but just the circumstances, the weather, the injuries, just going into that Iowa game, it just seemed like that was the most impressive game. I do want to ask you, what was the most impressive part of this win by the Oregon Ducks, Spencer? Because, look, I mean, you follow the Ducks, we follow the Ducks. We know they're not just this flash team. We're not one of the national media guys. We know this is a tough team, but what was the most impressive part of this victory coming away for Oregon out of Iowa City?
The way that they were able to execute in all three phases, I think, was just so impressive to watch, because there are so many ways that things can go wrong. And when you have that, it just underscores how great of a job the staff did having their guys prepared, how well they executed the play calling on both sides of the ball for the most part, I thought was really, really good. And I think that, being shorthanded in a game like that makes it even tougher. And then when you look at what they were going against on that final offensive drive, the execution, that's kind of the word that keeps popping into my head for this Oregon team and what was so impressive about it, that, you know, the defense played just about how I expected. I thought Iowa would score 13 points. They wind up with 16 and got some help from the officiating crew in order to get there. But that was, you know, about what I expected. Obviously, the 93-yard touchdown drive is disappointing to give up in that spot. But to then be able to come back and dig deep and have the intestinal fortitude to go down the field in the rain on the road with your playoff hopes maybe on the line, I think that was just a remarkable stretch of football there for Oregon to play in that situation.
It was incredible resilience and resolve. I will grant that. There's a couple of things that still bother me about the Ducks and maybe their potential and their ceiling. And this is not me necessarily trying to nitpick, because I think this was incredibly gritty, tough win, and not every team wins that game. But, you know, there are a couple of things. One, you're up 15-7. I wouldn't have put Iowa in the category of offenses to be able to come back and take a 16-15 lead in the fourth quarter, number one. Like, deep balls over the top on third and five, you know, that. You know, putting Tatum Tuiati as that kind of a spy slash solo linebacker there on the quarterback keeper on the fourth and goal, like, in theory, that's a good idea, but you don't have enough down linemen to occupy the offensive line to keep him free. He ends up shooting a gap too early. Like, you can't have that execution and that scheme and that leverage of a moment when the play call to me is kind of that predictable. Like, so there's something there. And I didn't like the clock management on the final drive completely. Like, yes, it's an incredibly clutch play from Moore to Benson, but they're shy of midfield with less than 30 seconds and still all their timeouts at their disposal. I was getting uncomfortable with their clock management down the stretch, and it probably shouldn't have come down to that kind of a clutch moment, even though certainly, you know, incredible play by Moore to Benson. Am I nitpicking there, or do you still have a couple of those flaws that you've got your eye on that considers Oregon a bit fortunate in addition to their toughness to win this game?
I don't think the level of detailed criticism is unwarranted. When you want to go win a national championship, those are sometimes the things that it comes down to. You know, last year, I think you could have very easily seen it as nitpicking to point out that Oregon safeties were exploitable and the rest of the team was just so good that, you know, they overcame that at times. And then the Rose Bowl happened, and what did Chip Kelly and Ryan Day do? They went right at Oregon safeties the entire game, any opportunity that they could, and exploited Oregon, and we all know how that went. I did not have as big of a problem with the clock management there at the end, because when you've got three timeouts and you're just on your own side of midfield in 30 seconds, you're giving yourself the maximum number of opportunities to continue to move the ball forward, which you need to do because you don't want to try and kick a 50-plus yard field goal. You know, everybody can do that against Oregon, but Oregon doing it, goodness gracious, we'd be asking too much. But I think that in that spot, you don't want to condense your playbook and have them thinking, well, they have to go to the sideline now, because now you're putting yourself in a spot where it's even tougher to get closer, and you have to, because you don't want the elements to come into play. And Oregon got themselves down inside, you know, it wind up being a 39-yard field goal. So they got inside the 30-yard line, and they still had a timeout if, you know, that sideline shot to Benson to the end zone had been completed short of the goal line, Oregon wouldn't have had to run up to spike. And if that had been second down instead of third down, they could have run one more play to either center the ball or get a couple of yards closer. So, no, I didn't have a problem. And in real time, I didn't have a reaction at all to that. I felt good about where they were at. And then, obviously, it worked out because they won the game.
Spencer, what did you make of the officiating in the game? We've had numerous callers. Callers calling for the FBI to be involved. Are you at that level, or is it just bad?
No, I'm not calling for the FBI to get involved.
Numerous people, FBI.
Is it
a Big Ten thing? Is it a Big Ten trying to boost up
schools? No, it's not contained to the Big Ten. Every conference, you hear this in the Pac-12 a lot, because the Pac-12 officials had some colossal screw-ups from time to time. But every conference thinks they have the worst officiating in the country. SEC fans will tell you that. I'm sure every other league fans will tell you that. And it was just the fact of the matter is, what's unfortunate is this job of officiating, this applies to Major League umpiring as well, it's clearly too difficult of a job for these guys. It's clearly too hard. I don't doubt that they aren't, or I don't doubt that they're trying. I think they want to get it right. I've met these guys before and talked to them. I know that they take it seriously, that they want to get it right. And I just watch over and over and over again. It's clearly too difficult for them. And it's unfortunate in football because you can't have robotic assistance in a number of areas. In baseball, the solution is easy. Stop letting these guys be behind the plate and call balls and strikes. They're clearly not able to do it at a high level. I'm sorry. That's just the way that it is. I've got enough evidence to know that that's the case. But in football, I guess we just have to live with it. But the lack of public accountability for years is infuriating. Iowa was flagged for one penalty for 1 yard in this game. And Kirk Ferentz is a heck of a football coach, and I did not expect, nor would I ever expect, watch an Iowa game, because it's not how they play, where they have 9 penalties for 110 yards. But I can go back, and I have, watched the entire game, and I saw so many blatant missed calls that helped Iowa in a number of ways. And there were missed calls against Oregon, to be sure. But Oregon was also flagged, I think it was, what, 5 times for 57 yards? 57 yards, half the field in a game that was decided by 2 points went in favor of the Hawkeyes. And I'm not going to attribute malice unless I have an actual reason. So I'll attribute incompetence. The crew was unacceptably bad, and the Big Ten should be ashamed of it.
If they would have ruled that 2-point conversion as a catch, I think that would have been your FBI moment.
I think that would have been a moment. But it's good to know the replay officials are still on top of it and getting stuff right. That whole sequence wasn't what I objected to, because in real time I thought it was a catch, and then I saw the replay and went, wait, it's not. Yeah. Then I look at the replay and then it's not. The lack of holding penalties is the think biggest grievance that Duck fans should have against the officiating in that game. But the other angle that I think has to be talked about with that is that should make Duck fans feel even better about winning that game, because you went into it with enough obstacles already. You are on the road. It is an awesome crowd. The weather is brutally tough. You're facing a good team, and you're missing 3 offensive starters. And then your defense was held the entire game, and it wasn't called a single solitary time, and you still found a way to win. Because unfortunately, officiating is bad across college sports at a number of levels, and that's just the way that it can be sometimes, and it sucks, and it's frustrating, and I wish there was more public accountability. But in the meantime, when you're a good team, you figure out a way to overcome that, and Oregon did.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football. Spencer, how concerning are these Oregon injuries if they continue to linger into November?
Well, if you can run for 260 yards a game at Iowa in a game where throwing is hard, who can't you run for 250 yards on? I'm not really sure. So I think that's at least an encouraging thing. I'm kind of going back and forth in my head on whether Sadiq or DeCorian Moore is the guy you would want back. But Oregon's going to have another rain game this week. So, frankly, I think you'd make the case that Kenyon Sadiq is the guy that you'd want to have back, because the run blocking for the offensive line was sensational. And obviously you want to get Alex Harkey back into the fold, because he's been a good player this year. But I think those injuries obviously matter. You want to bring them back. I'm not cratering Oregon's chances after watching that Iowa game with how they played without those guys on the floor, which, again, got to credit the coaching staff for the recruiting and talent development and retention of all those players, to where you could survive missing your 2 leading receivers and your starting right tackle, and you go to Iowa and amidst all those hurdles win that game. That's pretty awesome stuff from Dan Lanning and the staff.
Well, you talk about their chances if they aren't healthy. Just talk about their chances going forward. I mean, you got Minnesota and USC at home, Washington on the road. It's kind of a two-parter here. How would you rank that schedule, like, in difficulty? And 2, does Oregon have to win all those games to get in? Because, I can make the argument of if Oregon does continue winning, they're going to knock all their wins and all those teams out of the top 25. They may not end up with the top 25 wins. Does Oregon need to go 11-1 to make the playoff, or can they afford a loss? And what's the difficulty of these three matchups?
Well, I'm going to be really interested to see what the committee does with Iowa after the loss. In my top 25 of Locked On College Football, I didn't drop them out, because if you lose a game that you were one play from winning, why am I supposed to see you radically different than if that kick hadn't gone through for Atticus Sappington? Results should matter, to be sure, but overall, I still think Iowa is a good team. I will be okay with Iowa falling out of the top 25 if they lose again to USC next week, which they probably will. But I think for the Ducks, 11-1 obviously gets you in. That's not even a question. 10-2 should get them in. I don't think it's a 100%. I think there's a 7 out of 10 confidence interval for me that 10-2 gets them in. But I do think they could run into the issue. You know, it's a different situation than Penn State. But that same fundamental problem of, well, that team's not ranked anymore, so, you know, who have you really beat? And lost to Indiana at home. Like, okay, that's fair to knock them for losing to Indiana at home compared to losing on the road. But I think 10-2 should get them in. But I can't say that with 100%, with 100% certainty. So watch and see if Iowa stays in the top 25 this week. That'll matter a whole heck of a lot. I think regardless, Duck fans, as much as most wouldn't ever want to hear me say this, you have to root for USC next week to beat Iowa so that they are inside the top 20 by the time they play you. And then at the end of the year, 9-3 USC will be in the top 25, I believe. So that's the outlook for those games. Sorry, what was the second part of your question?
I just said rank the difficulty of the matchups.
Oh, yeah. I'm still putting Washington as the toughest remaining game. You know, weather dependent. Like we saw last weekend, Washington is not built to play a low scoring slugfest, and they failed to beat Wisconsin and lost their playoff hopes. But that game is still dangerous because you're on the road in a rivalry game, and now you're playing a Washington team who the best thing that team can do this year is beat Oregon. That is the most exciting thing Jed Fish could possibly deliver for Husky fans, is beating Oregon and either knocking them out of the playoff or at least having the victory and putting doubt in the Duck fans' minds that they will make the college football playoff. So I think that Washington's still the toughest game, followed by USC, and then I think there's a gap between them and Minnesota. Who's a solid team? And you might have another rain game this week that can condense stuff down and stop you from being able to go crazy. You know, Minnesota went on the road, lost to Iowa 41-3. Does Oregon have that in the rain this week? I think that'll come down to the Golden Gophers' ability to stop Oregon's rushing attack. In the last three games for Oregon, not weeks because there was a bye, has run for over 200 yards in every matchup. And that's a pretty good place to be if you're Will Stein calling plays.
Last thing for you, Spencer. Would you pick Ohio State today to be your national champion? And
yes.
If not, all right, well, then number two, who is their biggest challenger of the teams, you know, ranked toward the top? The Indianas, A&Ms, Alabamas, Ole Miss, Texas Tech? Anybody that you think could give them the biggest scare?
Yeah, Indiana is the answer to the question when they play at their best. I think the Hoosiers are just a legitimately great team and have played that way this season. And, yeah, they struggled with Penn State. Turns out it's hard to win in Happy Valley. Who could have foreseen? But I think that Ohio State has started to find their offensive rhythm. And because they haven't played a big game in a while, Julian Sain isn't getting the buzz that he deserves. But go look at his numbers. I'm pretty sure his completion percentage is at 81%. Not for the last month, for the season, he is completing around 80% of his passes. One of you can double check me in real time on that. But I think that for Ohio State, with their weapons, what they were missing early in the season was consistent quarterback play to get the ball to their wideouts. And now they have that, and there's nothing else they're missing. We know what Ryan Day is capable of as a head coach. He replaced both coordinators seamlessly. Their defensive talent has just been fantastic this year with all the guys they lost. And I just think that that is the best team in college football. And until someone proves otherwise, I don't know who I would take over. I think Indiana is the biggest threat. I think Texas A&M is interesting. I don't know that I trust A&M physically to match up with Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes would push them around a little bit. Just my impression of the Aggies, who are good. I have them number 3 in my top 25. But I think if Ohio State played Texas A&M, I'm taking the Buckeyes by 8 to 10 points.
That's why we bring Spencer on, Judah. Expert, 80.9% completion percentage.
There it is, 80.9. It's just called having too much free time to look this stuff up, guys.
And 9.9 yards an attempt on top of that. It's not just short stuff. That's third in the country, really second in the country next to CJ Carr for yards per attempt. So impressive stuff from Julian Sain. Spencer, go Blazers. You know, we'll catch up with you soon down the road. Thanks for making time and talking a little Ducks and college football with us.
Yeah, anytime, guys. 10-4 Blazers, 8:56 to go, first quarter. Love to see it.
I'm now. There he is, and he'll be watching Jeopardy later tonight as well. The old soul in the young man's body. That is Spencer McLaughlin talking a little ball with us here on the show. Play Punch and Audio, and then we'll talk to Ryan Harlan. What was that Saturday night for the Beavers? Ryan with On3 Sports, plus the 5 and 5 leading you into Monday Night Football. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.